And we're back with another episode of the MDM Podcast. Joe Morales, Jake Schroeding with you here on this Monday evening. I guess you can call it an instant reaction show because we'll open with the Rangers, who are now down 3-1 in this series against Pittsburgh. We'll touch on the Yankees and the Mets series from the weekend. Some interesting stuff on Chris Paul, what happened to his mom in the stands last night. I want to give some comments on that. But Jake, how we doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, Joe. For me, I'm doing good.
I know how this is going to go. This is going to be 40 minutes of straight bet. We might be on like the Yankees or Mets. And you go, by the way, Rangers down 3-1. But we are now 4 games into this series with the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Rangers, when I say they cannot run out of Pittsburgh quick enough, I mean it. Because they went in here with the series tied. They should have won game one, but that's long in the past now. They leave New York with the series split at 1. They come into Pittsburgh and put on one of the worst displays of defense and goaltending I think I have ever seen in a 2-game stint in an NHL playoff series. The Rangers came into Pittsburgh and allowed 14 goals in 2 games. That's including empty netters, but I feel like it's necessary to provide that because of how bad they have played. Whether it's Patrick Nemeth, who I cannot stand watching anymore, and Lindgren needs to get up and play. I understand he's hurt, but him on one leg is better than Patrick Nemeth. Whether it's Shesterkin, whether he has the yips, whether he just can't stand the first line of the Pittsburgh Penguins, whatever it is. Gensel and Crosby, I think, have a combined 15 points through 4 games. It's ridiculous. Whatever is going on, the Rangers have one more game to try and figure it out. They have dug themselves into a hole here, 3-1. Where I don't know, with a team this young, they can dig themselves out of it. I have not seen anything that shows me they can win another game. Now, they're coming back home, but to get to the second round, they have to go back to Pittsburgh and win another game. I don't see it happening. They might get the game, Monday? They might get the game Wednesday. But Friday night in Pittsburgh, if there is a game 6, they are not getting by the Pittsburgh Penguins. This series is practically over. With the way that Shesterkin has played, with the way that parts of this defense has played, I have no hope that the Rangers can win 3 games in a row here against the Penguins. They have done nothing to show me they can do that. And it's embarrassing. They went into the series, at least in my opinion, maybe you're not the Ranger fan. You could tell me. They were favored in the series. Then you see that the Smith goes down. You're going to be playing an AHL goalie for the remainder of the series, or at least till Jari comes back. What have they done? They've done nothing. They've lost 3 of 4. It's embarrassing. This is a series that they should have had wrapped up. He's an AHL goalie. It's embarrassing.
And Joe, I'm looking at the stat right now. It's on the screen because I'm still on. Igor's goals against in the last 2 games is 10.02. I mean, if that doesn't sum up the last 2 games in a nutshell, I mean, I don't know what does. And, I mean, we discussed it even on Friday about now Louis Domingue is in net. The Rangers had just come off a win at home.
Right.
And, you know, maybe the Rangers are now the favorite in the series. But, I mean, after the last 2 games, they as you said, they dug themselves in a hole. And Shesterkin has just looked completely awful. And the question for you is, do you start Georgiev in game 5 or to go back
to Shesterkin? No, absolutely. I was going to bring that up. There is no way you can put Shesterkin out there to start game 5. He cannot. This is simple stuff here, NHL goalie. He can't read a shot. He has no sense of shots right now. Off face-offs, he can't block the puck. It's embarrassing.
I know you've sort of denied this, but would you say after that Jeff Carter hit, Shesterkin has been rattled the last couple of nights?
Has he been rattled? I'm not going to say that's the root cause of it. I don't think that at all. But I think it's coming to Pittsburgh. The fans are clearly on him. They're chanting his name for 60 minutes each game. The fans are clearly on him. That's no excuse, though. You can't go into enemy territory and get 14 goals. It should be Louis Domingue doing that, the AHL goalie, not one of the Vezina candidates.
When you go to Pittsburgh, obviously you're not going to have that's not your home crowd. So you're not going to have your whole crowd behind you. Obviously you're gonna get booed out of the stadium.
Right.
I mean, the fans, it seems like obviously they were in Igor's head in some way, shape, or form.
They're in his, I don't know, if they're obviously in his head. He obviously has the yips. It's clear as day. Because these are simple shots. And this is not complicated stuff. There was one goal, I forgot who it was, but Nemeth leaves the guy open down low on Igor's right side. That should have been stopped. But the remaining five goals, because Georg gave up one, the other five goals, these are simple things. Goaltending fundamentals that Igor Shesterkin cannot get down. So going into game five, when the Rangers tried out there for warmups, Alexander Georgiev better be leading them out there. You cannot have Igor go out there and play another game.
And I mean, Georgiev in the game the other night, he actually looked pretty good, and he kept the Rangers in it, and eventually the Rangers tied the game up and then eventually lost. So, I mean, Georgiev at least gave you some sense of hope, which Shesterkin has just not given the Rangers over the last couple games.
Right. I mean, if I'm Gallant, I have no confidence in Igor right now. You can't. You can't have any confidence in him.
And obviously, Joe, the bigger issue is the Rangers' lack of defense. But another thing is the Rangers' lack of offense from their top two best players and maybe even their best defender. I mean, Zibanejad has been almost completely non-existent in this series, and Panarin has also done very little.
Their best line this series has been the line of Kaapo Kakko and Alexi Lafreniere. That is their best line. And again, two goals today, that's also unacceptable.
Joe, and those two guys are your two most inexperienced players on the team.
And they are playing the best. I mean, Panarin's been good too, I'll give him that. Kreider, you know, he's a presence on the ice. Those two have the most productive players on the ice through four games, absolutely. I know that about it.
And on defense, I wouldn't say Fox has had the most stellar series.
I don't think he's been great. I think Keandre Miller's been their best defender, Keandre Miller.
I think Keandre Miller, as I said, in the first two games was the X factor in those two games. Even though the Rangers lost one of them, I thought Miller was probably their best defender out of those games.
And obviously they're missing Lindgren, but is Lindgren really five goals? Is that how good Lindgren is? He going to stop five goals? No shot. It's not all on Lindgren. This is a total team effort right here. And they got to play game by game here. They have three games to win here, to move on to the second round. Like I said before, I have no confidence the Rangers can do that. Zero. I mean,
Joe, obviously you can blame a lot of it on the defense because of how non-existent they've been over the last two games.
Right.
But, I mean, the offense has to play both sides of the puck. It can't only be on offense.
Right.
We've also seen, for the most part, the Rangers' offense hasn't been what it's been all season.
Right, right.
Which is scoring a ton of goals, which the Rangers haven't really done over the first.
And that's being overshadowed because of how well Igor's been all year. No one's really noticed the Rangers' lack. I mean, this is before the trade deadline, obviously. No one really noticed the Rangers' lack of 5-on-5 goals. I think the power play is terrific, and we know that. But with Igor playing the way he was, no one really cared that they were scoring only 3 goals a game. And that was winning them games. We get to playoffs now. We're playing with the best teams, not only in the NHL, but in the Eastern Conference. 2 or 3 goals is not going to win it. And at the same time, also, you can't give up 7 goals either. This has been a total team effort in losing these last two games.
And Joe, you just nailed it on the head. You talked about how good the Rangers' special teams units have been, both shorthanded and on the power play. Mm-hmm. The Rangers went 3 straight power plays without scoring against the Penguins, and I think it was game 3.
Right, right.
Well, and that was when they eventually tied it, Joe. They had 3 straight power plays to take the lead.
Right.
And the Rangers didn't execute on that.
Definitely. Yeah, they played one period of hockey in game 3. They played the second period. Oh, that's all they decided to play. And that's evidently what caused them to lose the game. So the Rangers will now come back to the Garden in a winner-go-home game 5 for them. It should be Georgiev starting. I'm sure Gallant will be taking a lot of questions on that tonight. If we get any info on that before we get off the air tonight, I'll definitely I'll say it here. But that's definitely something that needs to happen. I think Georgiev needs to be a net for Igor, and that goes without saying. Jake, we'll move on to the Mets now. We'll start with the Yankees. The Yankees played today.
Yeah,
we'll give them that. They did play today. They got the series win against Texas. Cortes Florida with that no-no until the 8th inning, only to have Eli White break it up in the 8th inning with no one out. They scored 5 runs in 3 games here. And I understand they had 3 days off in between the games, and that could be an issue. But Texas Rangers pitchers aren't elite. I mean, they shouldn't come into the Bronx and hold you to five runs. I'm not making excuses with the days off. I think the Yankee offense needs to be better.
Who pitched the last? I know Gray pitched today, but who pitched the prior two games?
Glenn Otto, who was a former Yankee. And I believe
that's the guy that was in the Gallo trade.
Yeah, right? I forgot who game one was. I'll look it up for you, but go ahead.
But I mean, the Yankees offense obviously hasn't been there. But I mean, we said this on Friday's show, and it was Gleyber Torres. Mm-hmm. Gleyber Torres has become one of the Yankees' most clutch players, mm-hmm, I would mm-hmm. say. I mean, look what he did in game one. He hit the walk-off homer.
Right.
And I'm starting to see a little bit more consistency from Torres.
Right. And he's not lighting up the box score yet. He's not hitting the ball hard. But balls are going up the middle. That's all I can ask for. Like you said, he's clutch. And that's really his whole team. The story of the year, aside from pitching, because I don't want to complain too much, the best team in the American League and the first team in the American League with 20 wins. But when the Yankees need a big hit, for the most part, they come close. Like today was Rizzo putting the ball in the left center field gap, which scored Judge. For the most part, the Yankees get those clutch hits late in games when their offense isn't necessarily lighting the world on fire. And then there are games where they will play well. Like, look at the series against Toronto. They score runs left and right. But even in the series where their offense is lackluster, the starting pitching picks them up, and then one or two guys in the lineup combine for a couple hits, and they get the run in. That is why the Yankees are the best team, not only in the American League, but in Major League Baseball right now.
And Joe, as you were saying with the offense, that against the Rangers, you can slip by with scoring one, two runs a game right, because of how lackluster the Rangers' offense is. But once you start going against the Blue Jays, the Rays' offense, the White Sox offense, once you start getting against those good teams with very good offenses, you're going to need to start scoring runs.
Right.
In the first 7-8 innings. You can't just wait until the ninth. Oh, Joe, I have news on the Rangers, by the way. Shesterkin will start game five.
Really?
Gallant was just saying.
I don't know how you could put him out there. I don't understand.
So that's going to be very interesting.
I honestly, maybe it's because of the home crowd. I don't understand how you could put him out there for game five. What have you seen through four games that shows you, or let's go to the last two games. What have you seen through the last two games that he is mentally ready to play a winner go home game five?
Because, I mean, Joe, his head has just been completely out of it. As you said, he could have the yips.
Yeah.
Whatever that means in hockey, but I know the yips is in baseball. Whatever the yips is in hockey, he can possibly have that.
Whatever the case is with him, he's got 48 hours to clear his mind from these last two games in Pittsburgh and keep the Rangers in the hunt here.
100% agree. Let's get back to the Yankees.
Yeah. No, those really are the Yankees. They play, like I said, they took a serious, the best team in the American League. There's really nothing to complain about. But I mean, that little league ballpark, though, Chris Woodward. Maybe Chris Woodward should worry about his own team in last place and then comment on my stadium.
Joe, and then it came back to this, and oh, it was a joke.
Yeah. After Stanton took him 420 to left center field gap, which is not seen in any ballparks, please find me a gap bigger than the left center field gap at Yankee Stadium. After Stanton did that, oh, it's a joke, you know, my team's terrible, we're in last place.
My favorite was Michael Kay's tweet this morning that says, here from Williamsport. That was
amazing. Oh, that was awesome. That was so awesome. Funny. Oh, that was great. That was great.
Chris Woodward's a moron.
No, God, he's tired. Remember when he complained about the 3-0 stuff with Tatis?
Yeah,
the guy just has no sense for the game of baseball, and his team's in last place too. We really shouldn't be talking.
He spent the most money, and they're still in last place.
It's really bad. Let's go to your Mets now. Like, they took the series in Philly. Also, they split the doubleheader just like the Yankees did. They are the first team in the major leagues to 20 wins, and Mets' story stays the same. The pitching looks great. The offense gets timely hits, and every day it seems someone new steps up, whether it's Marte this series, Lindor, I gave him a lot of crap, but he definitely had a few big hits. Alonso finally broke through in the second game. It seems like someone new was coming through for the Mets every game. That's why they win here.
And finally, we started to see a little bit of the power from Alonso yesterday, going 3-for-4, 3-for-5.
Yeah, he drove in five of the six runs.
With two homers and an absolute bomb yesterday off of Nick Nelson, I think.
Yes, it was Nelson. Yes.
And I mean, Lindor's had a couple of clutches. He hit that double in, it was the first inning of the second game, I think.
Right.
Or something like that. Or it might have been the first game. But Lindor had another double. Marte started to wake up. He came into Philly going 5 for his last 5. I mean, as you said, the story of the Mets season has been their, for the most part, elite pitching. And, I mean, you saw it again from Bassett in Game 2. Not as much from Scherzer in Game 1, who sort of struggled his way through 6 innings. But once again, he was still able to get through 6 innings and save that bullpen.
I saw a crazy stat on Max Scherzer and was reading the Post this morning. I think it was Mike Puma that published an article on it. Yesterday was Max Scherzer's first team loss since May 30th of last year.
Yeah, it's been like 330 days or something, which is a crazy
number. Let that sink in. This is the first time his team has lost in one of his starts in almost a full calendar year.
That's like saying every time, obviously, every time you throw Scherzer on the mound, you have like a 98% chance of winning.
Yeah.
In total.
Definitely. Absolutely. Guy is just pure dominance. And what's crazy is when you think about how he was signed to be number two and pitch behind DeGrom, he was supposed to be the second best pitcher on this staff. And he is now with DeGrom out headlining the elite rotation that, like you said, has far exceeded my expectations. With Bassett, with the way McGill is pitched, even Walker and Carrasco when they're on there, they're pitching well. To me, I don't want to call it a bargain, but he's the number two pitcher in this rotation. It's crazy.
And Joe, when it comes down to later in the season, I think the acquisition of Chris Bassett is going to mean a lot more than it has so far.
Right.
I know Bassett has pitched really, really, really well, but when it comes down to late in the season, crunch time, I think Bassett is going to be a big-time pitcher for the Mets.
See, the Mets have a lot of these guys. They have a lot of these chiseled veterans that not only pitch in the playoffs, but they've pitched in pennant chases, when the important games in late August and September, like Bassett, Carrasco, Walker to a degree. I mean, he had a good first half last year. We'll see how this goes. But the Mets have a few of those guys that have fought through the wars. They know what they're doing when it comes time to go into a pennant chase. That's why the Mets, to me, are built to be a late season team.
And Joe, that's the one thing that you're going to get with Scherzer is he's going to grind out the innings for you, and he's going to be an absolute beast in crunch time.
Right.
And hopefully this year, playoff time for the Mets.
Right. And the Mets schedule starts to get a little rough here. And this is where, you know, the heavy tasks start. So right now, let me just preface, they can beat anybody. They'll compete with any team. There's no reason to believe that they won't. So after the 3-game series that they're going to Washington, they will host Seattle for 3. They'll host St. Louis for 4, and we'll see the antics in that series that are must-see TV. Then they'll go to Colorado, and say what you want about them.
That's always hard. Don't get me wrong. Colorado, I think, was the best home team.
Yeah, I have here. They're 11-5 at home right now.
Yeah. Colorado any day of the week.
It's not easy.
It's going to be a difficult task.
And I myself think they're playing a bit over their heads, but I wouldn't. Chance that I wouldn't say it's an easy opponent, and like you said, in that ballpark with them, they're a tough beat. And then they go to San Fran for 3. This so far will be their toughest task of this young season. And again, that's not saying they won't play there with them, but based on how they're playing right now, I have no reason to believe they won't. They will play well in these series against, like I said, Seattle, St. Louis, San Francisco. But this is the toughest task they've had so far.
See, I think they'll be fine when it comes down to the Mariners and St. Louis at home. But the thing I'm really going to look for is how the Mets respond with the Colorado and then having to go out to San Fran. Because no matter when, it's always going to be tough.
Especially that
layover from Colorado then to San Fran.
No, definitely. And what's weird about that, too, is so the Mets will Are they hosting San Francisco? No, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong month.
They already hosted.
The first week of June, they go to play the Dodgers, they go to play the Padres, and they go to play the Angels. So they come back for a quick homestand, then they're back out on the West Coast. That is rarely seen in baseball. But that's what you get when you play the American League West and you're in the National League playing the National League West. It looks like they're making a West Coast trip once a month.
Which, I mean, as you said, going out west and the time lapse.
Right, jet lag, absolutely.
And I mean, going, the teams out west are also...
They're playing really well.
They're also really, really good.
Right. Like, they had Arizona earlier in the year when they were bad. Now, like I said, they're going to Colorado and San Francisco. Then they're going to San Diego, the Dodgers, and the Angels. And then in late September, they're going to Oakland. So they're making four West Coast trips this year.
And the series in September, I mean, imagine being on the East Coast, being on the East Coast throughout all of September, and then having just a random two-game series against Oakland.
Right.
I mean, that can put a real dent in the just overall in the Mets'
right
schedule and just in how they play in general.
But so this is going to be their toughest task when they play against these teams that have racked up a couple wins. They have good starting pitching. They can hit the ball pretty well. The Mets have their work cut out for them. And like I said, and I'm sure you agree with me, I have no reason to believe they will not be in games with them. These will be very good. This will be a very fun 2 weeks with the teams they're playing. Not for you, but for me as a baseball fan. I will love watching these games with good teams.
No, especially the home series coming up against the Mariners and St. Louis. Two very good teams once again.
Right.
Both very, very good, as I said.
And that St. Louis series will be so fun because of what went on in St. Louis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And my most interesting thing with what you said about how they go out west almost every month is how the Mets are going to go into that series and how the Mets are going to rebound if they have a tough series.
Right.
Say they lose two out of three or even possibly get swept. It'll be interesting to see how they come back and rebound off
right,
that.
Right. Jake, anything else on the Mets?
No, I got nothing. They got to play the Nationals now. Not a tough opponent, but just take care of business.
Right, take care of business. That's exactly true. I didn't mention this at the top, but I wanted just to mention real quick the Giants are releasing James Bradberry, which, what does it say, about $10 million, right? I'm
yeah,
a little
but it's
10
also
and change.
It's also a dead cap of $11 million. So
right. So
I saw the Giants have a total of $30 million in dead cap this year, which is fifth most in the NFL.
Thank you, Dave Gettleman. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, Dave Gettleman put the Giants in a
hell of an effort out there, Gettleman. Good job. We are now looking at one of the worst secondaries in the league. Not the safeties, just the corners. I'm looking. I pull up the Giants depth chart.
Cornerback one, I'm pretty sure.
It's a Dorja. I pull up the Giants depth chart just because sometimes I miss some of the smaller signings. Cordell Flott would be the left corner. Darnay Holmes, Rodarius Williams. This will be fun.
He's a rookie, right? That guy's flat.
Let's see. He was a third-round draft pick, yes. That'll be fun. I love watching rookies. Adoree Jackson, former first-round pick. Let's see. We'll see how that goes.
He'll be healthy for five games.
Yeah. I love McKinney and Julian Love with the safeties. That'll be fun because they're young and exciting to watch.
Love Xavier McKinney.
Yeah.
Probably one of my favorite defenders.
But I hope the Giants don't run into a very good receiver because their number one receiver will have a field day with some of these corners.
Joe,
out there.
Look at inside the division. You got McClellan, you have Devontae Smith, now you have A.J. Brown, mm-hmm. CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup. I mean, you have a ton of star-studded receivers.
Absolutely. Now, just also mention, aside from Dak, you're not getting the most reliable quarterbacks either.
You're getting Carson Wentz.
Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts, yeah.
The Giants made Jalen Hurts look like he didn't know how to pass a football.
Yeah, that was great, yeah. But the Giants are making moves here to attempt to, I don't even want to say saving money, because they're not really doing that either. But this is damage control and cleaning up the Dave Gettleman mess. That's what this is right now. And the Giants will have probably a year or two of this before they can truly compete again. But yeah, we're cleaning up the Dave Gettleman mess here, Jake.
And it'll be interesting to see what Joe Shane can do with this Giants. I thought he had a phenomenal draft,
mm-hmm.
but obviously that needs to translate on the field.
Definitely, no, absolutely. And
I'm very excited to see what Thibodeau has to show.
Yes, Thibodeau O'Neal will be very fun to watch this year. Definitely. I wanted to wrap it up with, I don't know if you even saw this, but I was listening to the radio. Yeah, I was listening to the radio on my way to school, and I didn't catch the end to the Suns game last night, which, by the way, they are struggling, and if Chris Paul's championship, we've got to turn it up here. But it looks like Chris Paul's mom got into it with, or at least the fans got into it with Chris Paul's mom at some point during the game.
And I'm pretty sure his wife.
I thought it was his grandmother. I don't think that's true, though.
It was two different people.
Yeah, there were two people there. Yes. Yeah. They weren't taking too kindly to Hart being there. Well, I'll just say that. But the NBA released this soft, embarrassing statement saying that the fans were trying to hug her. All right, they were going in for some friendly hugs.
So that's the most BS thing. You don't just put your hands on. First of all, Chris Paul's coming into an opponent's territory, mm-hmm. and then some random fans decide to go up and hug your mom or your wife.
Hug, definitely. No, hug. That's definitely that's the word.
Hug. They're definitely yeah. going to hug her.
Definitely going to show her the love. Definitely, absolutely. But let's bring her mom on here. Let's see if they were trying to hug her. Let's see if that was true. But for the league to do that and not discipline, they ban the fans until next year. They can come back for opening day of 2023, but they can't come watch another playoff game. That's a real punishment there.
That's some punishment.
The leagues, and I'm talking all four major sports leagues. We saw it with the Yankee fans with who was it? Miles Straw and Oscar Mercado. The other night, the plexiglass fell on the penalty box attendant in Boston. Fans at sporting events, I don't know what has caused this, have been so rowdy over the last few months. I don't know if it was the pandemic or if it's just a weird spur of unruly behavior. But leagues have to start cracking down on fan outbursts like this. It's embarrassing to the sport, it's dangerous to the players, and now they're family members, which the last thing, I understand if you go after a player, which is embarrassing itself, you can't go after a player's mom, especially in enemy territory, you can't do that. The leagues need to step up here and do something about this.
And Joe, obviously Chris Paul can't defend his mom when he's out.
When he's out playing on the court. I think he tried to do the best he could, but there's nothing he can really do. Well, the last thing the league, does the league want another malice in the palace? Would that look great on their resume? No, it wouldn't.
That would be a disaster.
It'd be another disaster. The league has to do something about this.
I actually saw a good proposal, and it was that all family members should be put in some sort of suite or a private area in the arena.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, not every team is going to block off a section or something like that, or just give them a suite. But they should have some sort of like executive, like VIP family area.
That was my other point. Chris Paul is one of the best basketball players we'll ever see in our lifetime. He couldn't put her up in a suite. They had to sit with the general public. I mean, Chris Paul's mom. You sit with the crowd.
Yeah, you make a very good point, but I think a proposal of some sort of like family area or something like that would be beneficial.
Yeah, definitely. Jake, anything else you want to add?
I got nothing for you.
The Mets open up a series in Washington tomorrow night. I'll be at Yankee Stadium tomorrow when they open up a series against the Blue Jays. The Rangers are back Wednesday night at home when they lose to the Pittsburgh Penguins because Igor is starting. And I'll be here for an instant reaction show right after that happens. But for now, I'm Joe Morales. That's Jake Schwinger. We'll be back later in the week. This is the MDM Podcast.